Order in the court. It's time for Understanding the Law Radio.
Well, hi, and thanks for joining me for another episode of Understanding the Law Radio. I'm your host, Peter Lamont. Today's topic, AI, artificial intelligence, generative AI. What is the status of the law? Where are we? What's going on? When are the robots going to take over? I'm going to answer all those questions today. I want to start first by talking about Netflix. And before I get to the Netflix issue in particular, I just want to quickly go over generative AI. Everybody knows what it is at this point. ChatGPT, Claude, any of these other AI programs. And it seems as though every app you open up now, there is some generative AI function. The other day, I opened up, I think it was Facebook or Instagram or something. Maybe it was Instagram. And I went to go type into the search bar and it was an AI assistant and it wasn't helpful. So it just seems like that integration of AI into existing products that we're familiar with, existing services, is unstoppable. I mean, it's a rolling boulder coming downhill and there's nothing you can do about it. Now, the question is it good or bad? And we'll get to that later in the show. And we'll talk about, you know, my view, and I'd like to encourage you to start thinking about your views on generative AI if you don't have a view already. But this train is coming into the station full steam ahead. There does not seem to be any way to stop the future of AI. And again, we'll talk about good or bad, indifferent, and what my feelings are in a moment. But I want to first start with something that Netflix put out in late January of this year. Now, this is relevant because it's going to tie into what I'm going to tell you next about Netflix, which you've probably heard of already. But at the end of January, Netflix, they report to the SEC every year, and they talk about, you know, things to be concerned about with respect to the industry in general. And the thing that they brought to the attention this year was concerns over generative AI. They actually put this on their list of risk factors concerning disruptive changes to Hollywood. Now, interesting that this annual report that they file with the SEC lists generative AI as being disruptive to Hollywood. I'm not quite sure the tie-in there, but whatever it might be, it is. So according to this report, right, because the rule is that U.S. companies, that they have to outline these risk factors. That's how it all came about, you know, realistically. But they specifically said new technological developments, including the development and use of generative artificial intelligence, are rapidly evolving. If our competitors gain an advantage by using such technologies, our ability to compete effectively and our results of operations could be adversely impacted. So this is what Netflix is reporting to the United States government at the beginning of 2024. Now, fast forward to a week or so ago, and you've seen, I'm sure, the backlash over Netflix's alleged use of AI images in their recent true crime documentary. So if you haven't seen the documentary, I have not yet, but I heard it's interesting. What Jennifer Did is the name of the documentary, and in the documentary, it chronicles Jennifer Pan, who is a Canadian woman, convicted for her role in a murder-for-hire plot that left her mother and father both, well, the mother was killed and the father was injured. But what's at issue here is that there are images of Pan in which people claim that her fingers and hands and teeth don't look right. And they're saying that that's because generative AI was used. There's claims that in certain photos, Pan is made to look as though she's smiling and indifferent and laughing, essentially, at these charges. Whereas the original images of her, the ones that were, I guess, the police mugshots and things like that, show her with no smile. So they're looking at the teeth. And if you look at the one image, and what I do is I search this up specifically so you could see what I'm talking about. But the one image of her face where she's smiling, her left front tooth is discolored. It's very white. It's not right. It's sitting too high in her gum. It just doesn't look right. It looks fake. So the argument is that Netflix used generative AI to manipulate the face of Pan for the documentary. And in order to sort of push their agenda and drive the story into the way that they wanted to do it. Now, of course, Netflix executives are saying that's not true. They're saying that it was residuals from Photoshop and things of that nature, not AI. But still, manipulation through Photoshop, which if you talk to any photographer or graphic designer or graphic artist, they're going to tell you that Photoshop is industry standard for touching up pictures, and everybody's used it. Everybody knows what it is. So they're saying it's not true, not happening. They didn't use AI. It's interesting because at the end of January, they're talking about AI being a risk factor. So it begs the question, I mean, are you going to sit back as a company, particularly Netflix, knowing that you believe artificial intelligence is going to negatively impact your revenue stream? Are you going to tell me that you're not going to use or explore ways to stay ahead of your competition by using generative AI? I find that hard to believe. I find it hard to believe that if you know your competitors are going to be developing different technologies through the use of generative AI, that you're going to sit by idly and do nothing. Of course not. You're going to leverage that technology the same way that they are. You've identified it as a risk factor. So does that mean that they have used AI, in particular with Pan? I have no idea. They say they haven't. I look at the pictures myself. There's clearly issues. Could it be Photoshop? Maybe. Interesting point, though, on the Photoshop argument. I don't know how many of you have used the new versions, the beta versions of Photoshop, but the beta versions of Photoshop include the use of generative AI. So, for example, you could put a picture of, let's say you were fortunate enough to go out on safari, and you take this beautiful landscape picture of an elephant, but it gets cut off. And you can't see what's on the left-hand side of it. You only see half of the elephant. You can use this generative AI feature within Photoshop. You can select the area that you want to expand the image, and it will automatically, through the use of AI, generate the missing piece of that photo. So it would, in theory, create the rear end of the elephant and put it in the same savanna background, and it's very difficult to tell that it is AI generated. So just because people are saying that it's Photoshop, does it mean that there wasn't some form of generative AI because Photoshop now includes it? So that's an interesting point that I make, because again, integrating AI with, let's call them normal or regular or common platforms that we've seen in the past, is what's happening right now. So you see things like Google Docs and Google Spreadsheets. There's now generative AI incorporation. Photoshop, generative AI incorporation. Chrome, whatever it might be, you can see the tie-in now with generative AI, going all the way down to Meta and the use of AI in the search stuff for Instagram, like I was telling you at the beginning of the show. So clearly, it's developing at a very, very rapid pace. And I think that companies are scrambling to stay on top of AI. Now, what does that do for us as a society with AI? We've already heard the complaints about people using AI to generate images. And there have been artists who have filed lawsuits. There are companies who have filed lawsuits. And so from a legal standpoint, the development of this body of law concerning generative AI is also on the rise. It's in development. We don't have a full set of laws concerning artificial intelligence yet. It's just too new, and these issues have only recently been brought to the courts, and it's interesting to look at how the courts are dealing with them. So I want to talk about California for a minute. Because California has been a little bit ahead in the way of in looking at litigation and regulation of artificial intelligence. And it's actually quite impressive. It's so rapidly developing. So you're going to need somebody to come in and to look at this with fresh eyes, not somebody that's been, you know, practicing law since 1925. I mean, you need somebody that understands technology. So what's been interesting with California is a lot of these lawsuits are basically all the same. They're saying things like the Sarah Silverman lawsuit, who filed a lawsuit against Meta and OpenAI for copyright infringement. And then there was John Grisham and George Martin suing OpenAI for committing, and they call it systematic theft on a mass scale. And they say they're doing this by copying their works and essentially training the generative AI off of their works. But here's what I really like about the California courts. They have looked at this, and I'm hoping that perhaps it's a bit of a roadmap that's developed from this early litigation in California. But some of these early decisions, Northern District of California says that just because a copyrighted work is copied in full to train an AI system, unless the output of that model contains content that substantially copies the protected work, the copyright claims can't go forward. As a matter of fact, one judge, Judge Vince Chabria from California, called the claims nonsensical and said that these claims that Meta's copying the works into training data sets for open source AI does not amount to copyright infringement. And it's completely, I think, against what most people online. There's a group of people that, I don't know, you see it online and it's like AI haters. And I've heard from so many people in the marketing industry that if you use AI in any of your image creation, that you're essentially asking to be stoned to death by people who are so vehemently opposed to the use of AI, and that it amounts to marketing suicide because you'll be just lambasted on social media for using generative AI. But that is contradicted by what the legal trends are. And again, we look at California. There's another case, another judge, Judge John Tagar, who also ruled, very similar to the other cases, against Copilot, which is an AI coding tool that was developed by OpenAI and Microsoft. So Microsoft is using Copilot. In that case, the judge ruled that certain damages claims filed by the plaintiffs could proceed because of one significant addition, and that is that they include examples of licensed code owned by the plaintiff in the output. However, the other claims where it was just used to train the generative AI, they were kicked out. So you can see the distinction and the roadmap that's being laid out if the output is duplicative or substantially similar to the original source material, then you could conceivably have a copyright claim. However, if you're just using copyright protected materials to train an AI and the output is not substantially similar, then these courts in California are saying that it's not copyright infringement. So I think that's really interesting, because if other courts start looking, and that's typically what happens in law, you know, of course, yes, you'll have renegade courts that sort of go against what the other courts are doing. And people might be, you know, people that know about the law might be saying to themselves, well, wait a minute, just because something is ruled one way in California, that doesn't mean it's going to be ruled the same way in New Jersey or New York or whatnot. And that's true. That's 100% true. But jurisdictions look at other jurisdictions for guidance, especially when there's new areas of law. So I think that, you know, looking at California as sort of a roadmap, I think is something that's going to happen. I think people are going to look at it and say, well, let's look at the reasoning in some of these early cases, since California's now had an opportunity to, you know, sort of examine these copyright claims and rule on them. Now, I mean, what does this mean for businesses, for us? What does it mean for the law? And really, you know, what kind of litigation are we going to see from it? Well, I'll tell you right off the bat that I think what we're going to see is we're going to see unfair competition litigation, civil rights litigation, contract litigation. I think we're going to see it in employment. I think we're going to see malpractice claims from professional malpractice claims. I think we'll definitely see privacy and data issues, maybe some defamation, and then the general copyright. I think that it's a very large body of potential legal issues that we are going to see develop over the course of the next year, because of the rapid pace that AI is growing. Now, I want to talk a little bit about my feelings on AI, and then hopefully it'll prompt you to think about, you know, where you stand with regard to it. So I know that in my profession, a lot of lawyers, especially early adopters of AI, got themselves into trouble because they would ask ChatGPT to create or to assist in drafting legal briefs, and in particular to cite case law. They were looking for particular cases to support an argument. And they used ChatGPT and then never checked to see if those cases were actually on point. Well, they turned their briefs into the courts, and when the law clerks read through the cases supposedly supporting the arguments, what they found is that these cases don't exist. And the lawyers were reprimanded by ethics departments, and, you know, lots of nasty things were written about them in the papers. So I know it's being used, and I know that there's a good way to use it and there's a bad way to use it with regard to the legal industry. But it's not just the legal industry. It's everywhere. And as generations continue to evolve, we're going to see a lot of young people using AI the same way that my generation might have used Google. It's going to be just part of the technology use, right? I mean, when you think about it, I go back, and it's funny, I was talking to somebody earlier in the week and asking them, I wrote something in cursive, and they said to me, I know this is embarrassing, but I've never learned cursive. Now, obviously, this person's a lot younger than me. And I was blown away. How do you not know how to write in cursive? But, because I did a little polling on my own, asked some younger people, the vast majority of younger people do not know how to write cursive, or they can partially write it, but they can't read it, or they can read it, but they can't write it. And it's just really mind-blowing to me, because for me, it's second nature, and I'd rather write in cursive than print things. But that's, you know, I think indicative of generational shifts. So what we're going to see now is that these younger generations, the same ones that don't know how to write cursive, are going to see generative AI as just a natural part of technological use. It's going to be built into everything, and it's going to be something that they are extremely familiar with, and their use of it is going to be commonplace as opposed to what it is right now. Because even though it's rapidly developing, the argument can be made that it's still relatively new. Not new, but relatively new, and that we're still experimenting with it and still seeing where it can go and still working on its evolution. But that's not going to be the case in 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, whatever the number is. And that generation that's coming up, they're going to just see AI as a search engine, essentially. I'm not saying that AI is like a search engine, but the way we see Google, they're going to see AI as just, yeah, of course I use AI. It's not going to be a big deal. Now, what do we think about certain industries, and in particular, artists? Because that's really where I see a tremendous amount of backlash. When you use a generative AI image, people start to lose their mind because they're saying, well, what are you doing to the industry? You know, your use of AI is essentially putting somebody out of business. You're, you know, taking money out of an artist's pocket, or you are using AI, which is drawing upon existing images from other creators and stealing it. Now, I understand the argument, but at what point does the arguments that have been made in California concerning training data sets with copyright-protected materials transfer over into the realm of imagery or artwork? I don't know. I don't know where that lands, but I think if you go back to our earlier point about Netflix, if we believe that Netflix is not sitting idly by and allowing everybody else to use generative AI, and they're just drawing a line in the sand and refusing to use it, you know, well, then it is what it is. But I don't believe that. I just don't see how arguably an industry leader in the streaming and entertainment sector, right? I mean, they develop their own films. They have their own production studios. Netflix is not, you know, just the, hey, get a DVD in the mail and return it service that it once was. It's a full-blown entertainment studio. I don't see them jeopardizing the longevity of the company by refusing to use AI. So of course they're going to use it. Of course. And the same way that everybody else is going to use it. Now, you know, another train of thought, or school of thought, I should say, another school of thought is that using AI is going to put people out of work. And is it possible that that happens? It might be. Look, let's look at the auto industry in Detroit. You know, back when the assembly lines were maintained by workers, human workers, the landscape in Detroit was completely different. Then you bring in automation and robots, and yes, it cuts some of the work staff. And I mean, it's hard, right? Because do you want to see people out of work? Absolutely not. Have we seen it as a natural progression of technology over the course of decades, even centuries? Yes. I mean, what about, and I'm being facetious here, but also not, what about the cavemen who had designated tool builders, you know, like the guy that would sit in the cave and make axes out of rock? Well, we don't need him anymore, because now we have machines that make hammers or axes or whatnot.
It just, the natural progression, change is inevitable. And we are oftentimes resistant to it, but we always seem as a society, as a world society, to give in to the changes in technology and therefore the changes in society. Is generative AI, in my opinion, inherently evil? No, absolutely not. It's no more evil than Google. And you know what? I dare say this, it's no more evil than what Napster was. Now, for those artists like Metallica and people who were vehemently opposed to the use of Napster back in the 90s, Napster helped shape the streaming industry that we have today. And arguably, record labels and artists are getting significant royalties from the use of streaming services. So gone are the days when you are downloading, 2 cent MP3s from Russia on some of these services. Without Napster, without that initial foray into this idea of digital music, we would not have evolved into the streaming culture that we are today. So is generative AI at this early stage going to be looked at in the future as, you know, what shaped our use of AI? Maybe. I mean, I think that it's rapidly evolving at rates probably unprecedented, if I dare say that. I mean, I think we're going to see it in everything from tools, products, like vacuums. You know, we've got the Roomba and things like that. But wait until more sophisticated artificial intelligence is used in that. We see what Tesla's doing with its robots. You see what Boston Mechanics are doing with their robots. I mean, the things that are being developed right now, it's like, It no longer takes step-by-step progression. It seems to be leaps. It seems to be, it's, you know, every move is 20 steps ahead. So that's how rapid it develops. Now, getting back to my thoughts on this, I don't think that generative AI is inherently bad. I think that, like anything, you have to temper or control how it's used. I mean, anything can be bad when it's not used the right way or in moderation. You know, I mean, even things like sugar, for example, right? In moderation, sugar's okay. Excessive use or improper use of sugar, and you're going to have diabetes and all kinds of health problems related to it. So, you know, it's the same thing. Is generative AI inherently evil? No. Is the use of AI in improper manners wrong? Of course. But again, we couldn't say that with everything. You know, is a hammer inherently evil because it can kill somebody? You know, no. It drives nails into wood, but it can also hit somebody in the head and drive through their skull. Does that mean that that tool itself is evil? No, it's the use, the improper use of that tool that's evil. And I feel the same way with generative AI. I'm actually excited about the changes and developments in generative AI because I can see it having beneficial use for a lot of people. Now, I'm not going to get into this in today's show, but when you tie in the just never-ending increases in the cost of living, you can really see how generative AI might have an impact on the workforce because I think smaller companies are struggling to keep people employed. Despite what you might see in these employment studies and how employment rates or unemployment rates are down and more jobs have been created, but there will come a point where as inflation increases and as the cost of goods increases, I think a lot of the smaller businesses, in order to stay afloat, are going to have to look to generative AI to replace people. And I think that it's unfortunate, right, that people are going to lose their jobs. But at the same time, we have unregulated inflation that's causing the cost of living to skyrocket. Things are so out of control. I don't see how small businesses trying to stay afloat are going to be able to not use generative AI. That's a discussion for another day. Maybe we'll talk about that on another episode. But for now, I just want to, you know, wrap this up, thinking about AI as a benefit or an evil. And I want to have you give some thought to that on your own. If you haven't already, think about what impact AI is going to have on your life, whether it's in a business sense or your personal life. How are you going to benefit from the use of AI as time moves forward? You know, how is it going to help you stay organized, schedule things? How's it going to help you with your kids? What is the benefit that you're going to see? And you know, if you're a business, how's it going to help you in business? How's it going to help you be more effective and efficient? So think about that. Leave some comments on our social media pages. Love to hear it. And I'd love to get your opinions on whether or not you think that generative AI is a horrible evil or the way of the future. Well, that's going to do it. Thanks for joining me. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to Understanding the Law Radio. If you haven't done so already, make sure that you subscribe to the podcast. We're available anywhere that you listen to your podcasts, including Amazon, Apple Music, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and many more. Also, don't forget to check us out online on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Thanks again. We'll see you next time.